Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, we're in the Quicken Loan Studios in New York on CBS Sports Radio. National mortgage lender Quicken Loans apply. Simply understand fully. Mortgage confidently. Tomorrow night at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific. Don't miss some Arena Football League playoff action as the top-seeded Albany Empire battles the Washington Valor. Only on CBS Sports Network. Let's get focused here. Tons of baseball all weekend long. PharrellOnTheBench.com always delivers fat stacks. Football's coming very soon with NFL preseason, then college football blasts off. You got to be a member of PharrellOnTheBench.com. My pick service rocks. It's the cheapest in handicapping and the best return. And everybody knows it. So sign up today, PharrellOnTheBench.com. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, is brought to you by Geico. Hey, everybody, here's a quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Do you need homeowners, renters, or motorcycle insurance, too? Get it all at geico.com. So anyway, the Open is going on at Carnoustie as they head into the weekend. And we know now that Zach Johnson had a hell of a round. A 67 in the second round. We were talking to David Dusick last night at Golf Week about Zach Johnson and some of the guys that were on the board because he's won it before. And I think that was the, if I remember correctly, Michael Williams with us from CBS Sports Radio, a host and contributor, and my buddy in D.C., big golf guy. It's been a minute since I talked to him. Mike, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing great, man. I've missed you, man.
You know what I mean? I've missed you, too. The minute I saw your name tonight on the rundown, I was like, oh, I haven't seen my boy in a while. What's up? This is great. I'm glad you're back on. So so we talked about – was Zach Johnson – was that his first major that he won and that the one that, like, made him, or was it something else?
No, well, the first major he won was the Masters.
All right.
Which made him. And then the British Open after that. He won the British Open
right.
at St. Andrews. So – and it's interesting because you got a guy like Zach Johnson. He's the guy who I picked coming into this thing because several of the last champions in the British Open have been guys who are over 40. The great majority of the other majors have had champions that are in their 20s. That's sort of being the trend now with the guys who are winning their first major, like making their bones in the other major championships. But the British Open is different because rather than power, it takes patience. And you get guys like Henrik Stenson, like Phil Mickelson, like Zach Johnson who win that championship. So he's sort of in that mold of a guy who can really take a course like Carnoustie and succeed on that course. And it's not about power. It's not about how far you can hit the ball. It's how well you can sort of weather the storm, if you will.
So he started out with a bogey today, and then he still was able to rattle off three birdies on the front and go out in 34. And then he had two more in the back and clean pars the rest of the way. I guess a lot of people would play that first hole bogey and think it's going to be a long day and go backwards. He seemed to be unfazed, that patience you're talking about. He seemed to be unfazed by starting with a bogey because if I start with a bogey, I'm already swearing.
And, you know, rightfully so. You know, I'm the same way. And, you know, that's pretty much everybody. But, again, Zach Johnson is a guy who knows exactly who he is. You know, he knows he's not going to be a guy who's going to overpower any course, anytime, anywhere. He's a guy who's going to pick his spots and know where he can score and which particular point. And you look, you say the guys finished clean on that back nine. If you go clean through the back four, you finish par in the last four at Carnoustie. I've played that thing. And after playing that golf course, I've never been so glad to get off a golf course in my entire freaking life as I was to get off of Carnoustie, okay? It's like, okay, get your teeth out of my butt. I just want to go to the bar and have some scotch.
Right.
And you go four pars in a row on that course. That's basically like birdie, 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 birdie. So to score some birdies on that back nine, to go score a couple on the front nine, and then go clean through those last four, you're doing something. And Zach Johnson knows that, and that's why he's going to be in contention, I think, through the entire weekend.
How much do you think Michael Williams with us on the bench talking about the Open heading into Saturday's round three? How much do you think that Kisner double on 18 messes with his head tonight going into tomorrow? Because, like, if I doubled the 18th and I was in the lead at the Open and I doubled out at 18, I would a lot of things could happen. I would drink a bottle, and they may find me in a ditch, or I may not make my tee time on Saturday, even if it was an afternoon tee time. Because, Mafia, you know I've been known to not answer my phone. And if I don't answer the phone, they may not find me at the tee box. How much do you think that double got in his head?
You know, first thing, you know, I want you and me, like, to get in some counseling together.
Right.
Together, you know, we can get a good break, and that'd be just fine. You know, I think if the question is, I don't know how much that'll affect him, but I know it affects him less to have a double on 18 on Friday than it does to have a double on 18 on Sunday. And we know who that guy is. That's John Vandeveld, right?
Right.
You know, that's the guy who has a double or a triple. So
meltdown.
You have time to put it behind you. You know that you don't want to have a double. Usually, guys don't win major championships when they have double bogeys. That's sort of the point of winning a major, is to keep double bogey out of there for the entire week. But at some point during a British Open, because of the way they are, British Opens are like life. You know, you can do the right thing and have exactly the wrong result. We know what that's about, right? You and me both.
Right. What about Vandeveld? Can you believe that, like, all these years later, that they still torture that guy and show that meltdown? Like, can you imagine being him and that every year they do that? And or, like, whenever it's, you know, I mean, they go near this course, right? They do it to him. I think this is where it happened, right?
It is. It is. It happened in, I believe it was 1999.
Are you surprised, though, that they still, like, you know, ride that train? Like, they bring it out every time. They always mention him and show him, like, melting down. Like, it really is unbelievable that they've, like, tortured that guy his whole life.
No, he takes it the exact opposite. He's like, he loves it because it made his life. Otherwise, even if he had won, would you remember who John Vandeveld was?
No.
You would not. So I'll tell you a quick story. When I stayed at Carnoustie 4 years ago, I went and played the course. They brought me to the course. They brought me to the front desk, and you check in, and you run your credit card and the whole thing. They gave me a key with a room number on it.
Right.
I go upstairs to the room number, and outside the room, there's a brass plate that says the Jean Vandeveld Suite. And I'm thinking, dude, is this like a practical joke? Are going to be there's like exposed wires and like running water everywhere? Is going to be, are there rats and carpet peeling and lead paint? And the
what
whole
was
thing?
The movie with John Cusack? Didn't he stay in some hotel that was haunted and the room, he was like on the...
Very similar thing. But look, Jean Vandeveld has lived with it, you know? It's a thing to him where it's made him memorable, even more so than winning. By the way, do you remember the name of the guy who won it?
I just remember the name of that movie was 1408.
See, you remember it better. You got that, and I got Paul Lurie on the British Open.
Paul Lurie, who never mattered again either. So what about, like, and no one could even say who that is. That's, like, the greatest golf, whatever you call it, you know,
down?
Whatever you call, like, trivia. Like the trivia shows, pull that guy's name up, Paul Lurie. No one remembered him. So anyway, what do you think of Rory? Because I love Rory, and you know I've always liked him, and he's in it. So and he's won it, so he knows how to win it. He's right there. He's only four back, right? Or no, he's not even. He's two back.
And I really like what Rory's doing because number one, he's hitting some putts. Number two, he's playing with that carefree attitude. Rory is a guy who. He's sort of like the British Phil Mickelson. You know, good things happen for Phil. You know, it's how Phil hits a putt. He hits an 8-foot putt, and it's like he loses 5 pounds, you know. It's like his waist gets trimmer,
right.
His posture gets better, the whole thing. Rory's kind of the same thing. He's like a puppy dog. You know, he hits putts, and all of a sudden his tail's wagging. He's up. He's like a little Cocker Spaniel. But something bad happens, and, you know, he gets down in the dumps, and, you know, he's off to the SPCA pound. He is playing very, very well. He's hitting the ball well. He definitely knows his course, and he's won a British Open before. So he's not my pick to win, but I think that I love seeing him play well and trying to compete and overcoming that whole emotion thing. Just going out and do that thing, you know, do the thing that Rory can do, which, again, if there's any player that I say, you know, at any given day could put up a 63, I still pick Rory as my guy.
Jordan Spieth, he hasn't had a good year, but he played great today, 4 under.
Because he's hitting some putts. I mean, you know, the magic of Rory is not his full swing. You know, I talked to Nick Price many, many times and other of the all-time greats. They look at his swing and say, this dude's swing is like suspect. No, and none of them will ever come out and say that. But they say that this guy's swing is completely suspect, especially under pressure. So we've seen him like lay a toupee over, you know, a ball on number 12 at Augusta. We know that happens. But when his putter is working, it just covers up a lot of blemishes. So when his short game is working, his putter is working like it was today, you know, that's a guy who's in contention.
Do you think that Tiger can do something Saturday? He's 6 back.
I'm going to tell you something, Scotty. I love the way Tiger's swing looks right now. You know, I have been very skeptical about his whole comeback thing. I've been very skeptical about it because he couldn't drive the ball in the fairway.
Right.
And you have Tiger in a course like this where he doesn't have to hit driver. He hadn't had anything longer than a 3 or 4 iron, really, on this golf course. So this is where that 15th club, that mental toughness, that patience, and that will to win, and nobody's ever had that more than Tiger. If he can summon that again, I say this is the guy who could really move up the leaderboard and be maybe even in the final pairing going into Sunday. I love the way his swing looks. I love it. And he doesn't have to hit driver. If the wind stays down and he continues to not have to hit the long clubs, 3-wood, driver, that sort of thing, you know, God almighty, what a story that would be if Tiger wins on Sunday. I mean, we both take a plane to Scotland and go be there to celebrate that thing, right?
Probably. Did you think Michael Williams with us on the bench? Did you think Tommy Fleetwood, because he played great in the U.S. Open, and then how about today, all clean, the whole day. I think he had 6 birdies and all pars, a brilliant round, 6 under. He's 1 off the lead. He's played these courses his whole life. I say he's very dangerous going into the weekend.
If I give you a trivia question and answer my own question, can I get a shot of Michter's bourbon right now?
Can we get him a shot of bourbon? We can get you that even without having to answer trivia.
Beautiful. Thank you. The course record, who holds the course record for Carnoustie? Tommy Fleetwood. So clearly that guy knows how to score on that golf course. He was my pre-tournament pick to win. His game has no weakness. He's one of those guys like a Bruce Koepka, like a Justin Thomas, a Brooks Koepka, Justin Thomas. They have no weakness in their game. And plus, he has an extreme familiarity with Carnoustie. Yeah, he was my pre-tournament pick to win. I don't think anything's changed. I think he's still my pick to win this whole thing.
He was 72 fat on Thursday, and then this gigantic round today moved up from 47 to third, and he's right there, 1 off the lead. Just a fantastic round. Listen, Mike, always great catching up. It's going to be a huge weekend at the Open at Carnoustie. I can't wait to watch later tonight, late night, early in the morning. Always a pleasure having you on the bench, brother. I'm glad you're doing well. It's great catching up.
Yeah, thanks, man. I'm going to be in Ireland for the next 2 weeks. So if you decide to, like, you know, go AWOL for a little bit, hit me up. I'm in Kerry. Just text me, and we can go out and play around and, you know, find some Irish.
Dude, you are just living large. Like, so you're just chilling in Ireland and golfing and drinking beer?
I'm hiding, bro. I'm hiding.
That is awesome. I mean, how awesome is that? I'm miserable here. And you're
love
off.
You like a brother, bro. Love
dude, you're like
brother.
Off gallivanting in Ireland, and I'm here in this cesspool. Anyway, listen, dude, have a blast. Enjoy yourself over there. Raise one, back one for me.
You got it, brother.
There he is, Michael Williams, a contributor on CBS Sports Radio, my friend from D.C., great golf guy as well. 855-212-4227. I'm feeling that Tommy Fleetwood, Rory, Zach, all weekend, Zach Johnson, because he knows how to play these courses over there. He's won it before. I always love guys that have won on the Lynx courses at the Open to play well in it again, and I'm riding Zach again this weekend. I'm not surprised at all that he had that round he had today, 4 under.
This is Pharrell on the Bench.
I have to say that I enjoy watching these guys do their motorcycle flips and everything. I have no idea what purpose it serves, the X Games. It makes kids happy or something?
Fills hours of programming in the summer.
Right, like, but what is it? You get, you know, a lot of these guys, do you remember when, like, Sean White won, like, 50? 50 or 60 gold medals at the X Games? Didn't he do that? Like, he won, like, every one of them, and then he finally, like, went went to the Olympics and started winning gold medals and everything?
Yes.
So, my point being that, like, haven't there been guys that have been in this thing, like, 30 times in the X Games? They just keep doing it year after year until they're so old that it's almost ridiculous that they're still doing it. Like, you know what I mean? There's guys. I heard there was a guy the other night doing some 900. He's 51 years old. If, like, is that funny at all, do you think, Mafia, that a guy's 51 years old, he's still doing the X Games? Seriously.
51?
Yeah, like, the guy's 51, and he was doing some amazing.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
He's doing some amazing trick the other night. Everybody's talking about how old he is. But the reason is because, like, he shouldn't be in it, should
no, he?
No,
he shouldn't.
Some
be.
Old guy?
His kid should be in it, not him.
Right, like, what's next? I'm going to be in the X Games for something?
You should follow other pro sports. Like, once you're, like, 35, 36, you're done. Just hang it up.
I don't even think you should be allowed to be in the X Games if you're 30. I mean it. I think the 20s is it.
Should be like European soccer. Once you hit 30, you're done?
Well, once
or
you're
NFL running backs.
I think once you're 30, you should not be allowed to be in the X Games. You should be. It should be for kids.
Have an X Games senior circuit?
They probably already do.
I don't
like,
know.
I saw this thing tonight. Well, hold on, Shep. What did you want to say? Go ahead. I wanted to mention the arena football because I saw that on TV tonight, and I was thinking to myself, Jesus, they still do that? Arena football? I know they're running it on CBS Sports Network, the cable channel, tomorrow and everything. I did the ad for it, but I could give two shacks about that. I haven't watched an arena football game since literally, I'm going to tell you the truth, since 1987, maybe 88, the Pittsburgh Gladiators or something like that. I went to a game and I was like, why am I here? So, and I wasn't wrong. I mean, it's just, I mean, is that not the worst? Anyway, what do you want to say about this X Games? Because this is what I've been left with tonight.
I just don't think a lot of people watch it, to be honest with you. And I think the reason being is because
little
no
kids watch it. That's why 51-year-olds shouldn't be in it.
I understand that, but the reason little kids watch it is because there's no glamour, there's no glitch, there's no marquee name on the list. So my suggestion
is
this.
Can just root for everyday Joes or something?
No, but my suggestion is this, though. You're going to think I'm crazy.
Well, I already do.
Okay. You bring back your boy, and I don't even care if it's for a 10-second spurt. People will tune in to see
Tony Hawk?
Yes. He's the cash cow.
I agree with that. Now, listen, he's 50 now as well. But his endeavors off the circuit have led to skate parks for kids all over the world. He's done a great job in this country with the, you know, building skate parks. That's all I'll say, because I've been a part of his stand-up for skate parks event. But and he's been on his show forever. He's been a friend of mine and a good guy. I love him. I think he's incredible. He's a great businessman. But what he's done for kids is unequaled. He's made a difference in the lives of millions of kids in like neighborhoods that are run down and whatever, building these skate parks. So I'll never say a bad word about Tony Hawk at all, except that, you know, he's old too now. Like, when you're 50 plus, people stop trying to sell me that you're not old. Like, if there's one thing I always tell you, Mafia, is how old I am. I'm like, I'm always telling you, God, I can't believe I'm still balling and I'm 53 years old, that I still have game and I'm lighting up 20-year-olds. I am, because I can do it, and so can you. But I'm a lot older than you. I'm 20 years older than you.
You are.
So I don't understand. Like, you don't think 50-plus is old?
Way too old.
You know, Schmooze is always telling me, he's like, you're not old. I'm old. I'm like, people have been telling me I'm not old until I'll be dead. And then I'll be dead, and they'll go, man, that guy sure died young. You know what I mean? Because I feel old. I feel, because people say, you're not old. It's all a state of mind. I'm like, my ass, once you hit 50, you're old. When they start sending you, like, AARP stuff in your mailbox, you're old.
Right, people say, state of mind. What about the state of your body, which is disheveled at best?
Mine is just ravaged with
and
injuries.
That's the thing with these guys. Like, you can think, oh, yeah, X Games, they're just doing these flips and stuff. It's nothing. No, how many times are they falling and breaking things over the course of 15, 20, 30, 40 years of them on the board? Like,
right.
They're not just doing these tricks with no problem from the start. They're busting
like
their body the whole time.
I still play with all my injuries. You can't tell me. I won't deny I'm slow because of my feet problems that I, you know, I hobble around on the court. But I can put it in the hole and I can dish it. I can play. So I can still play the game, although I'm not, I have no running and feet and speed or anything like that.
Right, but you in the basketball court is, if you bang on your feet, or, you know, maybe if you get knocked over, you fall, maybe get a bruise. There, if you're old and you're still doing
they
it,
break
you fall,
limbs.
You're breaking bones.
Right.
You didn't look old to me.
I've done all that, too. But I broke my hand. I broke my knee. I broke my shoulder. What haven't I broke?
And just think, you're talking about how high that thing is. Like, your knees get banged up just jumping up and down.
Right.
Imagine what it's like when you're using your knees as shock absorbers coming 25 feet from in the air onto this hard surface.
Imagine how many of those, X Games girls they get to sleep with. Wait, are we on the air? Check 1, 2. Do you notice the eye candy they have at these events? Like, as the riders are being introduced to race and jump on these sky-high motocross bikes, there's like 15 half-naked girls standing there on the dais introducing them.
Right, with all like the energy drink stuff
on.
Yeah,
it's the energy drink girls. And they're just like the UFC ring girls, which are a giant waste of time. I mean, they are, right?
And that's another thing, too, with this. Like, half the sponsors are energy drinks. Like, how good are their hearts at 50-52 drinking Monster for the last 30 years?
How about the one they got, the Espresso Monster, which is like, it's like cocaine. I mean, it really is. It's liquid. It's literally, I think, it's Colombia in a can. It's literally, kilos of cocaine in a can of a beverage. Tim in South Carolina, you're on CBS Sports Radio.
What's going on, for real?
Hey, dude.
Hey, I want to get on a stupid bandwagon right quick, if you don't mind.
Right.
I think Toronto was stupid for getting rid of Rosen for Kawhi.
Right.
I think that was the stupidest move ever. And then what in God's green earth is Atlanta thinking? You get rid of two of your starting five for a 2022 pick, and then you just waive Carmelo. That was the stupidest thing I've ever seen.
Well, the deal was all predicated on the fact that they were gonna just buy him out, and so they knew what they were doing all along. What they wanted to do was dump Dennis Schroeder. That was their goal the entire time. All of the other pieces, unless Shep tells me I'm wrong, had nothing to do with this. It was all about getting rid of Schroeder. They knew they were never gonna have Melo, so that's really no big deal. That was like a quick get rid of his money off the books deal for OKC. What do you want to say about the Yankees, real quick?
Yeah, how are you gonna lose to a garbage bullpen?
I don't know. Hold on a second. These energy girls, the drink girls. I mean, honestly. Just give me 1 second here. Look at that girl right there on the left. Can you say that on the radio without getting in trouble?
Holy cow!
Nowadays, I'm scared to even say someone's beautiful. You're a beautiful person. Then you're in trouble. You're just in big trouble, mister. Anyway, the Yankees losing to the Mets tonight. Now, Jay's a huge Mets fan. The game was clearly fixed.
Big trouble, mister.
Jaden, you didn't think that the game was fixed?
You can't do that game to game with baseball.
So how about your boy Cespedes is coming back from his 7-month vacation and hitting a home run?
A home run. How about that? Good to have the big guy back.
Yeah, the big guy that's been the biggest waste of money ever.
100 mil.
100 million for nothing.
Yep.
You got nothing out of him. 9 home runs. He's a joke.
You'll get
fat
nothing
ass.
And like it.
He is a fat ass, too. He looks like he can barely run, let alone walk.
Loves to play golf.
I'll bet he loves to play golf,
because
he sure don't play baseball.
No.
This is Pharrell on the Bench.
So, if you're on hold, don't give up. I'll get to you. Just chill out, have a beer, whatever it takes. I got Joe Curley on now from the Ventura County Star, covers the Rams and the NFL. How you doing, Joe?
Good evening.
My man.
How's everybody going?
My man. I got to tell you, earlier tonight I was talking about this Todd Gurley thing, where just even mentioning it, the thought of it, the even the audacity to think ahead 3 years that there might be a strike – it's bad enough now, I said, sitting here waiting for football. There's nothing worse to me than the all-star break and then the rest of the, you know, that window till college football and pro football starts is, I think, the worst window in the entire year, in my view. And then, like, to think that 3 years from now there could be no football, pro football, it freaks me out a little bit.
Yeah, it's, you know, it... The scary thing, you know, from a fan's perspective, is that this you know, they're starting to talk about this 3 years ahead of time. You know, when we talk about labor in the NFL, we talk about how one side has been, you know, handing defeats to the other side, and it sounds like maybe the players are finally, you know, when you've got a young player, a player, you know, who's just kind of coming in to his stardom, like a Todd Gurley, mm-hmm. saying these things, you know, I think, you know, there's a little bit of a sign that maybe, you know, the labor side of things are, you know, that they're planning ahead 3 years, so that they're starting to kind of, the wheels are starting in motion. And, yeah, and when you have a star like Todd Gurley on board, you know, the players are going to be in a stronger position.
Do you think Joe Curley, with us from the Ventura County Star out in L.A., do you think that, you know, I feel that they've been getting stomped on, in my view, by the owners for as long as I know. I mean, I can't even go back literally to any time that they beat them, that they actually stood up to these billionaires and got a good deal, because every deal they sign is terrible. This is another bad CBA that they signed. And, you know, it's funny, they cry about their deals, but they're the ones that signed them. I mean, it's unbelievable to me that they signed these deals.
Yeah, I mean, the conventional wisdom is that, you know, the Baseball Players Association is the one that's, you know, has the upper hand in that situation. And then in football, obviously, it's the owners. And, you know, my personal, you know, my one personal opinion about, you know, labor in the NFL is that it's probably the one sport that you can argue that, you know, these players deserve every dime that they could get from a layman's perspective, simply because, you know, they're giving up their bodies, they're giving up their long-term health. There's certainly ramifications on a health side that goes in. You know, the longer you play, you know, you know, you're giving up something simply by playing. So, you know, to not have guaranteed contracts, I can see why, you know, the players, you know, are miffed about their position, and maybe this time around they're, you know, they're finally going to do something about it. We'll see.
Well, the last time was 2011, and it lasted 4 months. Do they have the onions to go to the wall on this thing and sit out the whole season?
I don't know. I mean, I remember the replacement players back in the late 80s.
Me too.
During that situation, how crazy that was.
It was terrible.
You know, talking about Gurley specifically, I mean, I think part of the reason why a young player, a young star like Todd Gurley is, you know, you're hearing comments like this coming from him, is certainly he's seen what's happening with Le'Veon Bell. He's starting to think, he's seeing what's happening with his teammate Aaron Donald, and he's, you know, he's starting to look at his situation. We asked him, you know, he doesn't.
We lost him. Go ahead. Start again right there. I lost you for a second, Joe. Pick it up when you were talking about Gurley again.
Yeah, I mean, he's somebody who, you know, normally when we talk about him, when we talk to him about his own situation, he, you know, he doesn't really go into it very much. But lately you're starting to hear him, you know, talk about, you know, numbers. He mentioned 80 million. You know, you have the Le'Veon Bell news, and he comments about that. And certainly, you know, these two things intertwine, like the end of the CBA and Todd Gurley becoming a free agent are kind of, they're going to happen at the same time. So I think his own kind of, he's looking at his own situation, he's looking at the situation of the players, and those two things are kind of intertwined. And you look at what, you know, the market for a running back, you'll get, you know, Todd Gurley arguably, you know, was the most valuable non-quarterback in the NFL last year. And here's somebody that, you know, if you put him on the open market, would he get, you know, $15 million a year? Would he get, you know, would he get double-digit millions a year? You know, what type of guaranteed money would he get because he plays that position? So I think, you know, these in you know, I think he looks at his situation, he looks at the situation of his peers, and I think those things are intertwined, and that's why you're hearing this from him.
Joe Curley with us. Joe, what did you think of Brandon Cook's deal? The reason I want to know what you think of him is because he couldn't. I mean, obviously, he didn't last with Breeze or with Brady. I mean, he's going to his third team here in as many tries, and then they give him 5 years and $80 million. What gives? Because I frankly, I don't understand that deal at all. I do not personally believe he's worth that money.
Well, you know, I think from a Rams perspective, you know, certainly, you know, the one guy or one, you know, the main guy who believes in Brandon Cooks is the one guy that, you know, needs to believe in Brandon Cooks, and that's Sean McVay. I mean, the Rams tried to get him the year before. They didn't have the first-round pick because of the Goff deal, and they have done nothing but, you know, talk about how much they love him and how much he fits in. They give him $80 million before he even plays it down for the team. But, yeah, you're talking about a guy who's played with two of the best quarterbacks, not just in the NFL but of all time. And now he's, you know, a young guy who's getting paid coming into, you know, a team where, you know, Aaron Donald's still waiting to get paid. You know, the quarterback, Jared Goff, is still on his rookie deal. We're talking, obviously, about Todd Gurley. There's a lot of there's a lot of balls in the air for that front, for this front office. And, you know, this is a guy, you know, certainly, you know, that the head coach valued. And you know, when you look at what DeSean Jackson did in Washington and DeSean McVay as an offensive coordinator, I mean, I think there's your comp. But, yeah, obviously, you know, $16 million a year for, you know, a second or third tier receiver, you know, is a lot of money, especially for a team that's got a lot of mouths to feed and a lot of guys to pay.
Do you think Wade Phillips' defense will be Super Bowl worthy this year? Because a lot of people think the Rams are, you know, the best team out west.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the amazing thing is they've got 10 of 11 guys back on offense from a team that led the NFL in scoring.
Right.
And Brandon Cooks is the one, that one outlier. And then, you know, defensively, and they've got Sean McVay, obviously, from an offensive perspective. And this defense may be, you know, the best aspect of this team this year, which is just amazing. When we have no idea what this defense is going to look like with Aaron Donald on one side and Ndamukong Suh on another. And don't forget about Michael Brockers. I mean, they have three legitimate defensive linemen, three of the best defensive linemen in football up front. And the secondary, you know, I would probably argue that Jacksonville is probably, from a starting perspective, probably the best secondary in football. But the Rams have to be the deepest. I mean, they've got reserves who, you know, played in the playoffs last year as well as anybody. They've got, obviously, you know, the type of bookend corners that Wade Phillips had when he was in Denver. You know, it's on paper, you know, certainly a Super Bowl contender. The big difference is last year they're coming off the Jeff Fisher era and they had low expectations and they blew everyone out of the water. How are they going to respond mentally, you know, to some of the highest expectations in football going into a season where it's make or break?
How's the stadium? I saw it making a lot of progress, this multi-billion-dollar stadium that they're making with the Chargers. How does it look?
Yeah, we had a tour about a month ago, and it's massive, and it's impressive, and it's coming along. Every time you see the updates, you're starting to see it take shape. I know, you know, when people fly in and out of LAX, you get a good little preview of it, and you know, it's going to be pretty impressive, and it's not just going to be football. I mean, they're talking about the Final Four. They're talking about the World Cup. They're talking about the Olympics. So it's really, you know, you talk about all these great players who have come to Los Angeles this offseason. This stadium's going to bring, you know, some of the best events in all of the sports to Southern California. I know a lot of people are excited about it.
Well, I can't wait to see how this football team lives up to these lofty expectations this season because they're loaded. On paper, they look like, you know, clearly one of the best teams in the NFL talent-wise on both sides of the ball. We'll find out what they're made of in short order. I know they play, I think, on the 9th against the Ravens on the road in their preseason opener, unless I'm mistaken. So we're getting ready to see what they look like. I can't wait to see how they play this season. Joe, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming on the bench. Have a good weekend.
Anytime. I appreciate the time.
My man Joe Curley with the Ventura County Star covers the Rams and the NFL. I want to hit Jeff up in Toronto. You're on CBS Sports Radio. Jeff.
Yo.
Yeah, you're on. What's up, dude?
Hey, what's up, man? I just wanted to say Sidney Crosby's the hardest working guy in professional sports. Elite athlete, I should say.
No doubt.
No doubt, yeah. He works all the time. I'm from Halifax. And
great player. You're breaking up really bad, bro. I can't deal with it. So I'll just say this. Crosby's got a lot of Stanley Cups and Olympic gold medals. So that's all that matters. He's a winner any way you slice it. I'm now watching a guy performing in the X Games with no clothes on. It would appear to me that this guy is motorcycle jumping naked. Is this what's happening here, Mafia? That guy has no clothes on, and they're allowing that to happen? He's bare-chested.
Apparently, yeah, he just took his jersey off and is going for it. Hopefully he doesn't fall and rip his whole body up.
But does he not look? And now he's shimmying and gyrating on people and having sex with the television camera.
Well, there's a huge audience there, so he has to play up to the crowd.
Why is this guy naked? He is just not supposed to be naked.
Why is that stadium so empty?
Someone needs to stop this television show. It's so awful. There's a naked motorcycle rider right now, and it's at some empty arena in Minneapolis. Congratulations. You guys are doing a great job there with no one at your event.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.